Hi, I'm Tim Hernandez. Welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire. Our guest today, our very special and distinguished guest, is a writer that I have long admired her work and really wanted to talk with here on our show for quite some time. I can't believe we haven't had her here yet, but her name is Margarita Engel. She is currently the Young People's Poet Laureate for the United States of America. I bet you didn't know that we had a Young People's Poet Laureate in this country. And she has written, man, I want to say over dozens of books about historical incidents and historical people, from Cubans to other parts of Latin America to here in the United States. She takes pieces of history and rewrites them and repurposes them for young adults and also for children. She writes children's picture books. She has one about the flying girl, Aida de Acosta, a first woman who flew. And she also has a new book out called Jazz Owls about the 1940 Zoot Suit Riots. And, you know, she's just a fantastic person going around sort of rewriting history all on her own. And her books are just well read, such a prolific and a generous writer. And I really look forward to speaking with her right now on Words on a Wire. Margarita Engel is the National Young People's Poet Laureate and the author of many, many award-winning verse novels, including The Surrender Tree, which won the Newbery Honor, The Lightning Dreamer, which won the Penn Literary Award for Young Adult Literature, and her verse memoir for young adults titled Enchanted Air, which received the Pura Belpre Award, a Walter Dean Myers Award, and many, many other awards too numerous to mention here. We are fortunate to have her on our show. Margarita Engel, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. It's really our pleasure and our honor to have you, on our show. Have we ever had you on our program before?
No, I don't believe so.
Oh, then it really is a special honor. We know that you are the Young People's Poet Laureate for the United States of America, and you're also a very, very prolific writer of many, many award-winning children's books, picture books, and young adult novels in verse. And I've been a fan of yours for quite some time, long before I met you, in fact. And so, yeah, it's really just an honor to have you on the show, so thank you.
Well, thank you so much. I enjoy your books, too.
Thank you. So I'm going to talk with you a little bit about all of your books, maybe not every one of them, but certainly at least the whole panorama of books you have. But I want to also focus a little bit more, too, on this more recent book, Jazz Owls, which came out, I believe, last spring, maybe around May, Simon & Schuster, and it's a fantastic book. So we'll focus a little bit on that. But before we do, can you give our listeners just a little taste of maybe some of your work, if you wouldn't mind maybe reading an excerpt from one of your books?
Thank you. Well, I'll read a poem from Enchanted Air, Two Cultures, Two Wings, which is my memoir, and it's my childhood memoir, and it tells in verse, by linking a lot of poems of memories of my summers in Cuba with relatives, which tells you how old I am because this was before travel restrictions. Right. So when I was a younger child, not a teenager yet, and then by the time I was a teenager, there were travel restrictions. Mm-hmm. And so for me, there was a huge before and after.
Right.
This poem is called No Place on the Map. After those first soaring summers, each time we fly back to our everyday lives in California, one of my two selves is left behind. The girl I would be if we lived on Mommy's Island instead of Dad's continent. On maps, Cuba is crocodile-shaped, but when I look at a flat paper outline, I cannot see the beautiful farm on that crocodile's belly. I can't find the palm trees or bright coral beaches where flying fish leap, gleaming like rainbows. Sometimes I feel like a rolling wave of the sea, a wave that can only belong in between the two solid shores. Sometimes I feel like a bridge or a storm. Mm. The reason I chose this poem is because I'm going to talk a lot more about bridges as we go along,
sure.
But as a child, when you belong to two cultures, to two countries, one parent from each, you do feel kind of like you're in between, which can be either a separating thing or a connecting thing.
Right. Now, if this is not too personal a question, if the way I understand it, your mother lived in Cuba and your father was here in the United States, is that right?
My mother is from the town of Trinidad de Cuba on the south central coast.
Okay.
And my father traveled to Cuba. He's American from Los Angeles. He traveled to Cuba After seeing pictures of her town in National Geographic magazine, he's an artist, and he wanted to go and paint the beautiful colonial architecture that he'd seen in the photograph.
Wow.
And on his first day there, they met on the terrace of a colonial palace that was being used as an art school. She was an art student. They fell in love at first sight.
Great.
But they didn't speak the same language. She only spoke Spanish and he only spoke English. But they were artists, so they passed pictures back and forth to get to know each other. And really, quite quickly, they knew that they wanted to be married. And they eventually moved to my father's hometown of Los Angeles. And I was born and raised there. But we were still able to visit her relatives during summers, you know, to spend 3 months at a time when I was a younger child.
Right, right. And what a fantastic sort of story of your mother and father's union. You know, these, I can imagine them, two artists sort of passing back and forth these images, you know, and I can't help but wonder, because your books are so filled with imagery, not just the illustrations, but even in your own language, it's so image driven and so colorful. How much of that do you think you got from your parents?
I have no artistic talent at all for visual arts, but I did absorb that romanticism of the way they met. In fact, the building that they met in is now El Museo Romántico because it's a museum of romantic era art. But I always felt like there was this sort of legendary, like people like telling those stories in my family. And so the stories from Cuba always meant a lot to me, even when we weren't able to travel, and when, you know, once the travel restrictions started after the Cold War really set in, after the missile crisis in particular, I felt like I had a sort of storytelling version of Cuba that I could keep with me, and that's what eventually became the inspiration for my writing, even though I was no longer able to visit the real Cuba or the real relatives who we were separated from.
Right. I mean, that's one of the things that sounds, at least also in my family, and I know for a lot of families, that we get these family stories passed on to us from our parents or grandparents. And some of the stories sort of fall to the wayside, but a lot of them get retold and retold and really become etched in our memory very vividly as young children and inform the way we feel about our ancestry. And I gather in all of your books, even in the children's picture books, there is a sense of almost a nostalgic of a nostalgia, actually, in these stories. Would you say that that's kind of true? Is that a quality that you strive for, or does it just happen naturally?
I think that people who lost Cuba by living in the U.S. and having the travel restrictions in place, of course, I'm not typical because I wasn't a refugee. So the exile that I've experienced is inherited. It's like second-generation exile.
That's right, yeah.
But I think that people usually deal with that having travel cut off, you know, mandated by official government policies, in one of two ways, either by becoming very nostalgic or by not thinking about it at all, just looking only forward, never back. And I happen to be one of the people who does look back and reminisce and remember and wonder. And I think that one of the things I've always wondered is there's a sense of having an invisible twin in the country left behind. And so when I finally was able to start returning to Cuba as an adult in 1991 after an absence of more than 30 years, it was like being reunited with the person I had left, the child I had left there. There was a real sense of rediscovery of a part of myself.
Right. And it seems like that, maybe that ember, I'll call it, of rediscovery has really ignited a kind of just a very a sort of vibrant flame in you, in your creative impulses, your creative work, your projects, you know, because I know that a good majority of your books are about Cuban history, or and particularly historical individuals or incidents that it took place in Cuba once upon a time. You have the poet Slave of Cuba, a young adult book and verse also, and, you know, The Surrender Tree. I think of all these other books that you've written, and or even the children's picture book, which is The Flying Girl, about Aida de Acosta, who learned to fly she was the first woman. And, you know, I think of how much, you know, this has now just really kind of taken off for you. You know, how do you, I don't know, I guess I don't even know if that's a question, it's more so just an observation, you know.
Well, you're correct in that I did explore history a lot, and even though as an adult I've been able to travel back and forth to Cuba a lot, I've wanted to bring some of the history to readers in the U.S. because I feel like Cuba was out of the map of very little geography is taught in the U.S., but Cuba was completely off the map in everybody's mind for so long that I wanted to introduce some of this history. And I have pretty much said in a series of five of those historical novels, I've pretty much said all I have to say about 19th century Cuba.
Yeah, right, right.
And I'm now writing some more contemporary stories.
Right, which kind of leads me to pivot towards this book here. But because I know that you have been taking these or lesser known histories and really have brought them out to a new audience, because these are all books that are, even though these are very sort of complex stories, historical stories, and in many cases political stories, you've been able to nurture them in a way and bring them out in a way and write about them in a way that is really aimed and just really successfully done. It's aimed at young audiences, from children's, like I said, children's picture books to young adult novels in verse. These are just fantastic. And it really takes a kind of a grace, I think, in the writing that I find that you have. And it really intrigued me that, knowing your work, knowing that you have this history as a Cubana, and that's where your ancestry's from, all of a sudden I see you write this book. I saw this book called Jazz Owls, a novel of the Zoot Suit Riots, and it had your name on it. And I said, wow, she turned a corner here. I have to read this book. I want to know. So well, what prompted you to write about this?
Well, I grew up in this neighborhood, and I grew up in the decade right after the 40s. You know, I was a child in the 50s in this neighborhood in Los Angeles. That's my hometown.
Right.
And so the adults around me, I grew up in a Mexican-American community, so the adults around me who were during the 50s and 60s and then into the 70s were in, you know, the height of the rich variety of nonviolent protest movements in that community. You know, the unionization of the canneries and of all the farm worker movements that, even though Los Angeles is a big city, that were rooted in California and that community and that society, and the anti-war protests during the Vietnam era. You know, when I was a teenager, this anti-war protests in Los Angeles were led by the Chicanos who had suffered this horrible violence against them.
Right.
Not that long ago, you know, only a decade or two earlier. And so I really, I'm always thinking about peace.
Good, yeah.
I'm always looking for ways to think of peace in the future when it seems like such an unlikely direction right now for the world and for California and for the entire United States.
Right.
And so in thinking about those peace movements, those nonviolent movements that I experienced myself in that community, and looking back at the roots of what people had gone through experiencing horrible violence against them, I was wanting to honor people who were able to survive and rise above what had been done to them.
Right. And, you know,
to become nonviolent leaders.
Right, right. Well, let me actually say to the listeners out there that if you're just tuning in to Words on a Wire, we're here with the Young People's Poet Laureate and prolific author of many, many children's books, picture books, and young adult novels in verse, historical young adult novels, Margarita Engel. And she is on the phone with us today from Central California. And, you know, Margarita, I think the sort of those who know about the Zoot Suit Riots, I think the general knowledge of it is usually, you know, that there were, you know, pachucos in the 1940s wearing zoot suits and that were beaten by military men there in Los Angeles in the early 40s. Some folks might gather information from, of course, Luis Valdez's pivotal play, Zoot Suit. But, you know, you took a kind of a different approach to writing about this piece of history. I know that a lot of it, by your own admission in the back of the book here, that it's fictional characters, a fictionalization, although it's based in very real incidents with real people. Would you want to talk a little bit about just the way you finessed this approach?
Yeah, I didn't want to overlap too much with the play, which I love, and the musical, which I love.
Right.
What I wanted to do was look more at family life, because the play is really a lot about courtroom procedures. And I wanted to look at family life and also at the way women's roles were changing. The women who had been working in canneries from very young teenagers had different job opportunities as World War II progressed, and their roles changed. And so even though the Zoot Suit riots, you know, they are, of course, misnamed. They should be called the Sailor Riots because the teenagers didn't start it. They were attacked. They weren't the ones rioting. But I also wanted to look at the way this is relevant today because without stating it, I think it's just kind of, as you read about that time, and I did a lot of research, so I feel like I've hopefully represented it accurately. But when you read about that time, you see that the police were unwilling to arrest men in uniform. So instead of arresting the sailors who were the ones rioting, they arrested the victims, the teenagers. And I think that we can see these kinds of attitudes happening now in many different aspects of society where the victims of racism and of violence are being blamed instead of the criminals being blamed. And I just think that there is some a message here for us now, kind of, you know, wondering about the future and what direction all of this can lead.
You know, and that's, I mean, I just, I can't think, honestly, I really can't think of another, as I was reading your book, I can't think of another author who is able to, or a children's book author, a young adult author, who is able to finesse, I think, the politics and the nuances and the very sort of real traumas of historical incidents and moments in a way that is accessible to young readers as well as you do. And as I think just, you know, the fact when I learned the news that you were the Young People's Poet Laureate for this country, I said, that is exactly right. That is so right. You were perfect for that role.
Oh, thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Well, one thing that I would say is that in researching these historical novels, it's just so important to read first-person narratives. So I try to get my hands on every diary, letters, anything people wrote about themselves, because I really want to know how it felt. I don't want to just know how what happened. But how did it feel? And so then I, and this is a daring step. This is a risky step. Then I like to write in the voices, first-person voices of all these people whose lives I've imagined. And it's always risky to write in a first-person voice because my novels are usually multiple voices. So I'm trying to imagine how it felt to a lot of different people, and that's really quite a challenge. But at the same time, I feel like the way history has been taught in the past was just what happened. This happened and that happened. Without the emotions that show they're real people. And so I'm hoping that young readers will also imagine, you know, what were the feelings of these real people in these situations. When they're reading first-person poems, in fact, they could write their own poems in response I've left some voices out, which I always have to do. It's impossible to show everybody. But there's a tendency for history to be taught from the point of view of the famous people, who are usually military. There's a tendency for history to be taught only in terms of big wars and big generals. And I don't want to write about them. I want to write about ordinary people and ordinary times, you know. This wasn't the biggest story of World War II. This was a very local story. occurrence, but
that's
it's
right.
big to me because it was right. my hometown, and it is important.
Right. If you're just tuning in to Words on a Wire, you're listening to the voice of the Young People's Poet Laureate, Margarita Engel, who's talking to us all the way from California. Margarita, would you mind reading maybe just a little excerpt from your book that we're talking about, Jazz Owls, a novel of the Zoot Suit Riots?
Yes, I'll read a poem called What Will the Future Be Like? And it's fairly far into the story. It's in the voice of Lorena, one of the sisters in the family.
Mm-hmm.
They've been working in canneries and are gradually becoming union organizers and then eventually moving out into other types of work.
What page is that on, by the way? I can follow along.
Well, it's page 131.
Okay.
While peach season leads to tomatoes, Maricela is gradually transformed from one person into another without losing her original self. I'm changing too. My hair bobbed short, my clothes so deliberately dull that no one would dream of wearing them to a dance. I spend part of my paycheck on union dues for dignity and part on war bonds to help Papa and Nico fight for liberty from the Nazis' hateful ways. But who will struggle for freedom from racial hatred here at home?
And again, that's the voice of poet Margarita Engel reading to us from her new book, Jazz Owls, a novel of the Zoot Suit Riots. It's a novel in verse for young adults. And I have a question that I'd like to ask authors on our show, and that is, how old were you or where were you when poetry found you?
I was walking to school, walking home from school, something about being outdoors, something about the rhythm of walking. I had already read a lot of poetry by the time I was 5 or 6, and I'd had a lot of poetry read
wow.
to me, both in English and Spanish by my mother.
Wow.
And so I just remember around that age starting to make and recite poems in my mind as I walked along looking
wow.
at my surroundings. And there was something about the rhythm of walking that would turn into
wow.
verses.
Incredible.
So I was really, really very young. And I think that writing grew from my love of reading.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a natural step. And that's one reason that it's so important for children to read a lot and to be read to a lot.
Yeah, I agree.
That they can grow quite naturally into becoming wanting to write as well as read.
Sure, sure. I mean, along
without anybody forcing them to and turning it into a chore.
That's right, yeah. And, you know, that's what I always try and tell youth especially, too, that there's always a book out there that was written just for you, you know, and our job is just to find that one. That's usually where it takes off. When we find that one book, you know, we start to piques enough of our curiosity that we continue. That's the idea anyways, the hope.
And then the other side of that is that when you don't find it, you want to write it yourself.
Ah, yes, that is
exactly
right.
And there's simply, I grew yes. up at a time when there were not diverse books for children.
Right, right.
In the U.S., and so there certainly weren't books about Cuba.
Sure, yeah.
I felt like I had to write those myself. I think by the time I was 15, even though when I went to college I studied sciences, I think by the time I was a teenager, I knew that I also wanted to write about Cuba because there just weren't any
right.
books that weren't
right.
strictly, you know, this happened, that happened kinds of history.
Right.
There weren't these books that I'm talking about where the inner lives and the feelings and thoughts
yep.
of people who experienced Cuba were shown.
And that's so great because your books are being taught in schools all across the country, you know. And I know that I was in Colorado recently and I was at a school in Boulder, Colorado, an elementary school, and there were your books.
Oh, wonderful.
And yours and Juan Felipe Herrera's books, his books. And, you know, and I said, wow, of course, you know, I always feel like I'm at home when I see yours and his books. So,
well, that makes me really happy.
Yeah.
And there was a time about 10 years ago when a lot of educators would say, well, you know, kids don't like poetry. And I don't think they say that anymore. It's just not true.
Yeah.
Because they're starting to give them a chance to like it. Now,
that's
if you
right.
if you keep telling kids poetry is scary, they're going to be scared of it.
That's right. Yeah.
But so it's so important for adults, if they're scared of poetry,
yeah.
to give it a chance.
Yeah.
They're probably scared of it because somebody told them you know, to be scared, right, or because they were forced to analyze things that weren't meant to be analyzed, we were just meant to be enjoyed.
Right.
So I think if they just tell the kids to enjoy the poem, to experience the poem, instead of telling them they have to dissect it, that there will be a completely different attitude. And I think that the uncrowded page with the open spaces between stanzas and between lines is very inviting.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And I like that you said that. I think that that is absolutely right. The exposure to folks, when we expose poetry, it should be just a very kind of just an experience of enjoyment, of appreciation. We don't always have to take it apart, deconstruct it, and break out our math calculators to figure it out, you know?
Right. Instead of saying, what did it mean? Maybe we can ask kids, how did it make you feel?
Right.
Because those open spaces between stanzas, they're not empty.
Mm-hmm.
They're filled with the poet's emotions and with the reader's responses. And so they kind of resonate like the echoes after ringing a bell. And that leaves you with a feeling. It doesn't leave you with an analysis.
Absolutely. And on that note, I think we will end our interview, Margarita. It's been such a pleasure having you on our show. And for you listeners, that is the voice of Margarita Engel, the Young People's Poet Laureate for the United States. And we've been speaking about all of her wonderful books. If you're a teacher or a parent or just have children in your lives, or even if just you yourself appreciate good history, I would encourage you to pick up any one of her books. I assure you won't be disappointed. Margarita, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you for coming on our show.
Thank you very much.
And that wraps it up for this week's edition of Words on a Wire. I'd like to thank our very special guest, Margarita Engel, the Young People's Poet Laureate of the United States. Also want to thank our great producer back there, the wizard behind the board, Stefania. Thank you. And we'll see you next week, same time, same place, here on KTEP 88.5 FM.